Welcome to a Book a Day podcast, and I'm back with another book, or to be specific, another monograph on a famous, legendary Indian. And this time I've got a monograph on Homi J. Bhabha, the famous nuclear physicist, who is also referred to as the father of India's nuclear power project. I'm sure some of you would have watched the TV series called Rocket Boys, and there you would have known more about him. But in case you haven't, but or also if you have, still I would say reading this book is going to be of great value for a couple of reasons. One, it's written by Biman Nath, who himself is an astrophysicist. And what happens with these monographs is when an expert is talking about another expert or this famous person, then they talk about certain aspects of the protagonist's lives, which we might otherwise miss. Or we miss out on certain technical details of their work, or fail to interpret their works, or to make sense of them. So that's why these monographs, they really help you if you're not coming from the position of expertise in that field. Even then, it makes a lot of sense for you to understand their work in its entirety. But just so you know, let me briefly talk about what really his life was all about. So he was born in the early 20th century, 1909, in a Parsi family. And as you would know, I'm assuming you would know that Parsis, they were a tiny minority, but they were financially quite well off, which still is the case. They are really, really a tiny minority in India, but financially they are at the top of the ladder. And that was the case back then as well. Especially, this was the community that grew tremendously during the British colonial period, because they were sort of outsiders to India. They came from Iran. They were the Zoroastrians who came to India and preserved their culture. So they were always seeing India from the outside, but they were also quite educated. They were into trade. So that was something that brought them closer to the Britishers. And because of these skills and abilities, they themselves grew and at the same time contributed significantly to the economy. So that was the setting he was born in. You can imagine quite a rich household, very cultured, quite elite. And right from his childhood, he was exploring art, he was exploring science. Quite a brilliant man right from his early days. So education was going well. Then he goes to Cambridge, where he explored different disciplines. He explored music, literature, art and sciences. He was enrolled in engineering courses, although he wanted to study the hard sciences, the research, the physics. But as you know, Indian parents, they just want you to study engineering. And that was the case with him as well. And I find it quite interesting that almost a century ago, he was kind of arguing with his parents, presenting his case that he doesn't really want to get into engineering and wants to pursue something else. His love is somewhere else. So let me read a few lines from the letter that he wrote back in 1928, which is 96 years back. He says, "I seriously say to you that business or job as an engineer is not the thing for me. It is totally foreign to my nature and radically opposed to my temperament and opinions. Physics is my line. I know I shall do great things here, For each man can do best and excel in only that thing of which he is passionately fond, in which he believes, as I do, that he has the ability to do it, that he is in fact born and destined to do it. My success will not depend on what A or B thinks of me. My success will be what I make of my work. Besides, India is not a land where science cannot be carried on. I'm burning with a desire to do physics. I will and must do it sometime. It is my only ambition. I have no desire to be a successful man or the head of a big firm. There are intelligent people who like that, and let them do it. I hear you saying, but you are not Socrates or Einstein. No. And that is what Berlioz's father said to Berlioz. He called him a useless musician when he was young. Hector Berlioz, who is now accepted as one of the greatest geniuses and France's greatest musician. How can anybody else know at what time what one will do if there is nothing to show? It is no use saying to Beethoven, you must be a scientist, for it is a great thing. When he did not care two hoots for science, or to Socrates, be an engineer, it is the work of an intelligent man. It is not in the nature of things. I earnestly implore you to let me do physics. So a couple of things you can see in this letter which this 19-year-old homie wrote at that time. One is how clear he is about what he wants to do, and something that is so relevant even today, that the parents should not really force their wishes upon their children. And if your child is clear, his or her interest lies somewhere, they should encourage that child, should not become a hurdle in that path. That is one thing. And the second thing is how this young boy is oozing with confidence. And that really helps when you're going to pursue something that you love. This kind of confidence is certainly going to help you. So anyway, long story short, his father asks him to get A grades, and the boy gets them, and then he is allowed to pursue his studies as he wants them to. And then he studies physics. Remember, this time, this was the time for physicists, the great physicists of that era, Einstein, Niels Bohr, or Heisenberg, or even Satyendranath Bose for that matter. These people were doing tremendous work. And especially after Einstein, how the science community moved from classical physics and ventured into the realms of atoms and further deeper there, and we explored quantum physics. This whole sphere of particle physics that opened up, and combined that with the practical applications of these particles, what Oppenheimer did in the Second World War. This was an incredible field to study at that point. And that's what Homi Bhabha did. He studied, and more interestingly, he came back to India. He came back to Bangalore, and it was late 1930s, during the war years, 1940s, and right after India's independence. Those were the most significant years of his life, and for a couple of reasons. One is that he studied himself as a scientist, all these phenomena. But more importantly, something that is of lasting value to India as a country is that he focused a great deal on scientific education, its institutions in India. And we learn how he persuaded the Tatas, he was close to them, he persuaded the government officials, and started Tata Institute of Fundamental Research with a budget of, the first year's budget was just rupees 80,000, and of which 45,000 came from the Tata Trust, 25,000 from Government of Bombay, and 10,000 from CSIR. So that meager budget was there. And with that, he started one of the most significant research institutes in India that still holds great value. So while we do talk about India's IITs and their impact on the global stage, I think when it comes to the research work, innovation, the quality of education, contributions to science, these are the scientific institutions such as Tata Institute of Fundamental Research, Bhabha Atomic Research Center, or even CSIR, their contributions to science have been of great, great importance. Not to forget Indian Institute of Science, where Homi Bhabha also went. So while we do talk about the IITians becoming CEOs of tech companies and achieving this kind of success in Silicon Valley, in the startup scenarios, I think we must also share these stories of scientists, because these are the people who are creating things of lasting value, and their legacy is going to be tremendous. And in fact, going forward, that was the time, let's say in the previous decades, when engineering was going to propel India into the modern economy. But I think going forward, if you want to stay ahead in the game, you've got to have a thriving scientific community, the culture of science which Homi Bhabha advocated. In fact, let me quote a few lines from Bhabha's speech at the inaugural of Tata Institute of Fundamental Research. He said, "The pursuit of science and its practical applications are no longer subsidiary social activities today. Science forms are the basis of our whole social structure, without which life as we know it would be inconceivable. As Marx said, man's power of nature is at the root of history. And we have in our own time seen the history of our world shaped by those countries which have made the greatest scientific progress. The progress of science has also been of great philosophical importance in widening our mental horizon and showing the limitations of common sense ideas based upon the world immediately perceived by our senses. The study of cosmic radiation forms the main field of experimental research at this institute, though I hope and trust that in the near future, experimental work will also extend to nuclear physics. To deal with this vastly increased range of human experience, our philosophical and logical background has had to be widened, and mathematics has provided the most powerful vehicle for the exact transcription of thought which cannot be expressed in words. I have touched on the philosophical aspects of science because ideas are some of the most important things in life, and men are prepared to suffer and die for them. Theoretical work, both the creation of new mathematics and the use of it in the description of nature, is to form an important part of the work of this institute. I am convinced that it is ultimately these exact theories embodying in concentrated form our knowledge which will form the basis of the mental discipline of the youth of future generations, rather than the study of dead languages or limited or archaic forms of logic." So that was his vision for India, for scientific education in India. And I don't know how far we have come, and I don't know if we have done justice to that vision, but it's really good vision to have, to progress in future. And we must not lose sight of it. So that's one reason you should read his book. And the second reason I would say it's still a valid one is to see his life, how the life of a young boy who dreams to study science. He's in the elite circles back in the British India, but he was close to people like Gandhi, Nehru, even the Tatas. So this little boy in the elite setup, he's still a nationalist. He's observing the world as an Indian, comes back, wants to contribute to India, sees the wars, the economic struggles of India, sees the challenges of teaching and studying science in India at that time when the literacy rate was really low, and still having that ambition to make India a nuclear power, to build rockets in India, to go to space, all these ambitions. That is something you have to admire. And that's why I would say you can keep this book by your side if you have a young child interested in science, or if you yourself are interested in it. You can pick it up, read it from time to time, and just amuse at the wonders of science and scientific education. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll come back with another book, another story next time. Thank you.